Hello, my friends, and welcome back. If you've been listening to this show for a while, you've probably become accustomed to a certain way that I do things. But tonight, in light of recent events, I felt it appropriate for us to do something different. We've been through so much over the course of these last 4 years, and though we've won a great victory, we are also tired, traumatized, and terrified of what could have been. And we also know that there is so much work left to be done. In reflecting on all this, I was reminded of the late Maya Angelou and her immortal poem, "Still I Rise." I felt like these words, more than any other, would be appropriate to mark this moment in history. But I am not worthy of reading them. So I asked my partner, lover, and friend, Honey Elizabeth, a poet in her own right, for help. She graciously agreed, and so I hope these words will give you what it is you need to move forward.
You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I'll rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? Because I walk like I've got oil wells pumping in my living room? Just like moons and like suns with the certainty of tides. Just like hopes springing high, still I'll rise. Did you want to see me broken? Bowed head and lowered eyes. Shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries. Does my haughtiness offend you? Don't you take it awful hard, 'cause I laugh like I've got gold mines digging in my own backyard. You may shoot me with your words, you may cut me with your eyes, you may kill me with your hatefulness, but still, like air, I'll rise. Does my sexiness upset you? Does it come as a surprise that I dance like I've got diamonds at the meeting of my thighs? Out of the huts of history's shame I rise, up from a past that's rooted in pain I rise. I'm a black ocean, leaping and wide. Welling and swelling I bear in the tide. Leaving behind nights of terror and fear I rise. Into a daybreak that's wondrously clear I rise. Bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave, I am the dream and the hope of the slave. I rise. I rise. I rise.
As the day breaks, let me invite you to sit back, pour yourself a drink, and enjoy the show. I'm Rob Celtic, and this is Drinking and Dance at the End of the World.
Hello and welcome back to a very special episode of Drinking and Dance at the End of the World. Today we'll be breaking with the standard show format to have a group discussion with some of the members of Freedom Movement, a collective of anti-racism activists within the dance community that seek to build conversation and education for the purpose of generating freedom, which they define as awareness, healing, and equity in action. I'm very excited to have these folks on, and in this particular moment in time, I think it's essential to generate these types of conversations. So it is an honor for me to introduce my esteemed guests. First up, Longtime listeners will recognize friend of the show and former guest Jade Soul Zuberi, a native of Detroit, Michigan, now living in Las Vegas. He represents the Godchildren of Soul crew as an artist, director, dancer, selector, and activist. Soul, welcome back, my friend.
Thanks for having me again, man.
It's good to be back. Oh, dude, thank you for coming back on. And for those who want to go deeper into Soul's story, please check out episode 3, Maintaining Integrity with Soul. Next up, I'm pleased to introduce y'all to Isis Avalos, a dancer and activist from Brownsville, Texas, who received a BFA in dance from the University of North Texas. Her work in dance making is based on uplifting the duality of Southern borderland lived experience in the U.S. Isis, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on, and my ass almost called you Isis again. God damn it.
We're not doing a thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm doing my best. you're welcome, for real. My next guest is the esteemed Dr. Damon Silas, who is an entrepreneur, a healer, and an artist who tackles the subjects of mental health, personal development, and professional growth with a dynamic twist. A former contractor with the military and DC school system employee, he has used the challenges he has experienced and helped countless others to increase and improve their healing and growth process exponentially. A 2-time published author with another on the way, radio and podcast host, which we got to plug this, y'all, a mental health mixtape, which can be found on WDRB Radio, as well as iHeartRadio, and From Morning to Action out on iTunes. We will have those links on the show notes for y'all to peruse at your leisure. He's also a dance instructor, and this father of 2 fur babies and husband is originally from the Boston area and loves calling North Carolina home. Dr. Silas, welcome.
Thanks for having me, y'all. And I really got to work on shortening my intro, my bio.
You just have so much. Your elevator speech is long, Damon.
It's doing good. The most.
Well, I mean, I tried. I was thinking, like, should I edit this for him? Mm-hmm. And then I was like, nah, it's disrespectful. I don't know him like that. So.
Well, I appreciate you, Rob.
Of course. I appreciate you coming on. And I did actually, because I know JoJo, hers was like, all right, I can definitely summarize some of this shit. That said, finally, I am very happy to welcome my old friend JoJo Diggs as the first white lady I've had on the show. So
yeah.
Look at you. JoJo began her dancing journey later than most at the age of 22. She was immersed into ballroom dancing and house clubs in Washington, D.C., and quickly found her way into multiple forms of street and club dance. Dancing house in the club for 5 years, she was absolutely in love, having found house music or music that made her feet the way soccer did. Moving to the West Coast to pursue dance further at 27, she kicked off a career that has spanned decades, brought her to 30 countries, and granted her the experience of being one of 2 women to take the stage with the legendary Jabberwockies crew. She's now shifted from doing a lot of work for the culture, that was in quotes, y'all, to centering Black voices and creating equity where possible. She proudly stands behind all Black Lives Matter. I got scared for a second. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, it's like, one word flip and we're in big trouble.
Yeah, no, of course. Right. Well, it says all Black Lives Matter here. So all Black Lives Matter, constantly working to honor her position as a guest in Black culture. Now she has 2 organizations she works behind, the Dance Safe, an intersectional organization against abuse, and Freedom Movement, which generates content about social justice issues and how they relate to the dance community. Her current work focus is in utilizing metathought, psychosomatic analysis, and therapy for authentic expression in movement. JoJo, welcome.
Yes, you read my whole bio.
Yeah, and I'm in the mountains, y'all. I've got way less oxygen up here. So.
That took work.
I'm gonna need a second. Uh-huh. All right, so for everyone at home and for my esteemed guests, we raise our drinks to the sky. Cheers to your health and safety.
Cheers.
God bless.
Salute.
Clank. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers to the apocalypse.
It is the end of the world. So, just, for context,
just in case we go there today.
We might.
Yeah.
For context, for the listeners at home, by the time this comes out, we will probably know who our next president is. As of right now, it is up in the air. This is Thursday, the 5th of November, Guy Fawkes Day. And most of the country is still riddled with anxiety. But regardless, the reason that I wanted to have this discussion is that a lot of friends that I've been talking to, my partner included, are scared. In this exact point in time, we have no idea where the country is going. And regardless of which old ass white man becomes president,
right? Mm-hmm.
The work still remains the same. Mm-hmm. If Trump stays in office, our problems are, egregious and obvious. And it's the same shit we've been dealing with for 4 years, with the added threat of this man having absolutely no consequences, which he never behaved like he did anyway. If, however, Biden is elected into office, which God willing he will be, we have a separate danger of white folks growing complacent. We have a danger of people kind of going back to sleep as they feel an imminent danger has passed and not keeping the momentum going. So either way, I feel it's very important to have voices on who have been doing the work, who know way more than I do, and who can kind of just flesh out some of these issues and what they think is, you know, an appropriate way forward. I also want to have the disclaimer that, all Black, Indigenous people of color are not a monolith. Mm-hmm. The voices that we have on this show today are by no means the gospel truth set in stone, tablets from Moses, etc. This is just a sample discussion with people who have been doing the work. So that's all I can say.
Yeah.
So I will do my best, as I mentioned before we start, I will do my best to shut the fuck up now that I have kind of set the stage for y'all. But I will have questions here and there as needed. So in general, to kick things off, and y'all can take this wherever you want to go. How has everyone been coping these last few months? How have the politics of the moment played into your respective experiences in the larger dance community?
That's such a huge question.
Yeah. Not everybody at the same time.
I love making that joke. Normally I'm the one who does that. So right. Thank you. Thank you, Damon, for stepping up.
You're welcome. One of us had to. So I'll just set it off from a mental health perspective.
Please.
And then, I'm just thinking you are absolutely correct in terms of just the amount of fear and the worry and the anxiety. I've definitely noticed it in my practice and working with people for myself as well. It is rampant and it is very much validated and real. I think there's one thing that you may have missed in your spiel about who gets elected, because you didn't mention Trump supporters. And that's my biggest concern, right? Like, I know complacency is one issue, but the level of pushback and violence and vitriol that I worry about with him stoking those the flames of racism so blatantly and so, so much that he does. That's my concern, is it will give people, and already has given people, that permission to act on their basis of instincts.
Absolutely.
And, so I just worry about that. I know for me, I've just been doing a lot of work with helping people acknowledge whatever it is that they are feeling and, giving them certain tools for that. And also, like you said, just how can we use our bodies as tools of expression during this time, and also our art to express what needs to be talked about in the world and in the dance community in particular. So I'm going to leave it at that for now.
And I very much appreciate you bringing that up as well, because I mean, that is very telling. As a straight white dude, I am not facing an existential threat. Whereas most of my friends, my partner is a queer black woman, like she is fucking terrified. So thank you for that reminder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Damon on that. That's something that I've been thinking about the most. It's just, you know, it really doesn't matter who wins. Black people, LGBTQ plus is going to be fucked regardless. So, you know, like, I was telling y'all, like, you're just going to have to strap up soon. Because with a lot of the videos I've been watching of Trump supporters going around and trying to, like, use scare tactics to people that have Black Lives Matter shirts on or, you know, or holding a sign. One time, you know, I'm just like, all right, they're taking it there, you know, and I can't really leave it up to chance or to do the right thing. I did that 4 years ago, and then Trump got elected. So after that, I was like, all right, well, I can't really depend on society to do the right thing, which I think we're all really having the realization about with the 55% of white women voting for Trump. And people are like, what? Wait, what? I didn't know that. You know, so there's still so much shock value that's happening in this election. One, the fact that it's super close lets you know racism hasn't went anywhere. And if anything, it's like at its peak. You know, again, I would say, you know, as far as like how it, where it comes from in the pro era, I feel like this has just been a huge dragon that went to sleep. And Trump was the person to like take the chains off the dragon.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And I'm glad that you brought up the issue of strapping up. Like, I think that's something to get into a little later in the show. Like ideas for making sure everyone stays safe. But when you mentioned like how close the race is, the, you know, over 50% of white women and their support for Trump, et cetera. And like, you know, your treatment of voting like the last time around as compared to this, it reminded me of like just this idea of there is this expectation for black people, for people of color to like show up to the polls and save us all. Like that was even on display when I was watching the ABC coverage on election night a couple nights ago, when North Carolina, South Carolina, you know, didn't go as expected, or Georgia or Florida, they started bringing it up. You know, like, well, why isn't the black electorate engaged? You know, and so that immediately, once things start going south, it seems people revert to that idea.
They keep us out of this system, but then want us to save people from the system.
Yeah, for me, I just really think we're voting for a status quo. You know, like. The same system, right? Like, it's not like if Biden wins, the system will like just collapse and it'll dismantle. Actually, we're just continuing on the same struggle, same resistance. It'll just maybe not F with our mental stability in some ways, just because of the hateful rhetoric that you know, Trump has in a way succeeded. But for me, really, this season, I guess, since all of this started with electoral votes and all of that, has been really my focus on the Latinx community. And we're definitely not monolithic. And there has been an increase, a 3% increase in Latino men and Latina women, a 3% increase. And there has been a decrease in white men. And there has been a 5% decrease. And white women, obviously, you know, like Jade mentioned, has been a 2% increase. And so if you really look at this.
Well, sorry, Isis, you're referring to Trump support?
Oh, sorry. Yes, for Trump support. These are based on the exit poll results. Yeah. And so, yes, sorry about that. So you start to see this. And for me, it's like the Latinx population is growing so much, and it will become the majority. And you know, this is something I've been talking about with my group of friends, but really looking at like how right now the focus has been so much on white folks and, you know, white supremacy and all of that. But whiteness itself can mutate and takes on and, you know, it's an internal practice in and of itself. So seeing that the way that it has turned up in the Latinx community is a little bit, you know, alarming in a sense for me. But also you have to understand, we have to understand that there's such a history where like the Latinx community that's in the U.S. come from other countries that have experienced communism, dictatorship, the whole thing, socialism. So they have this fear that, yeah, it's a whole other thing. I won't go into that. But yeah, I think also like with the whole white women part for me, it's just, I'm really like, I want to like reach out to the white women in my neighborhood, my community, and just be like, okay, y'all, like you do, you know, you do realize like, this is not like, oh, you can breathe now. No. Like we're just continuing. Like we're just continuing. It just keeps going instead of this, like, oh, Biden wins. Okay. Like we're going back to normal, or, you know, And so it's like, there's no going back. There's no going back. And I think like, that's something that I really want to make a point. Like there is who we were pre-Trump. Like we just can't allow it anymore. And that's going to take a lot of accountability from, you know, I believe the white community, and also like all of us being in community with each other, right? The intersectionality of that too. But that's where my mind is right now.
Solid. Jojo, as a member of the white community, your thoughts?
I love that it became sort of like a news report just now.
Yeah. No, I have this thing where I was like, okay, man, the first time I have a white guest on the show, like my first question is going to be like, all right, racism is white people's problem. We've got an hour and a half. How are we going to solve this?
What is the solution?
Yeah, and go. And even then, I'll totally like excuse myself and put it all on the guest.
Yeah. You know, just...
I would say like the first thing I wanted to just like note is this word like politics and political, like really I feel like the Christian community and the spiritual community are having like a really hard time seeing outside of themselves. Isis mentioned it, like white feminism. It's hard to see outside of certain things that we really like live into. And I hear a lot of the dance community and like the spiritual community kind of being like, oh, well, you know, like we're beyond politics, or I'm not a political person. And, you know, Amanda, she posted, I love Amanda Seals, and she posted this thing. I think she just got out of the shower, but she was like, I cannot with you all like saying that you're not political. Like what streets do you think you're driving on? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just really important to like recognize that we're constantly, there's nothing not political about like our entire day. Right. So I feel like I'm seeing so many of the like, false narrative of like, well, we're becoming divided, and you know, it's not that, like things are coming to surface. White supremacy tells us that we can't be fully expressed unless we look like white supremacy narrative, and I think people are finally expressing themselves. Trump gave like a pass to like white supremacists to be like, hey, this is who I really am. Out of that rebellion, I think other people are expressing themselves, and Jade said something right. Like, was awesome, and he was like, people want community so bad they're willing to compromise, no, settle for the illusion of it. And you know, this isn't this is unifying. And I, you know, that just never left me. You said it on a live a while ago. So for me, I feel like people are getting slapped, but also there's just a lot of still misunderstanding, and I just feel like some of the perceived liberation is like the how do I say this? Like the perceived liberation is like literally what's stopping the liberation.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think a little later on, if we can, I want to talk a little more about the danger of white conservatism, but also the danger of white liberalism, because the racism really exists pretty pretty consistently on both sides. It's just different forms and flavors. But it, speaking to the point of dance and politics, or the people that say, I don't want politics in my dance, etc. You know, as we've said on the show many times, like, this is a political movement. Like, these dances are here because of politics. Mm-hmm. And if you can't deal with that, like, fucking leave.
Yeah, seriously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how has your work, addressed to everyone, how has your work within Freedom Movement been received within the community?
I feel like we've been supported. I feel like it's maybe a little easier for people to hear it because it's not from a person. That's something I'm just sort of like speculating, because sometimes it feels like a little bit that there's a bit of a wall. Like, people know who's in it, but like, I don't know. Sometimes I'll hear people say some bullshit like, well, you know, I don't really like the way Jade approaches things. So, you know, I'm just don't have a good taste for it. Like, you know, nothing's going to stop you if you are doing something, right? Like, not liking one person wouldn't stop you from being a part of the movement, right? So I feel like, you know, Freedom Movement has given us a little bit of like, maybe created a little bit of ease for people to listen to. And now, you know, it's not like, it's not Jade saying it. It's like, well, this group of people believes that this is true. So there's power in those numbers.
I assume you all have received pushback.
We really haven't, actually. Like, when you asked, I was like, I can't really think of a time. I mean, we posted one thing that was like someone else's material. We talked about Trump, and so we had all the trumpets coming in, blaring their horns.
All the Trumpster fires.
But yeah, I mean, to be frank, I think mostly the dance community maybe isn't confident enough to publicly confront it, because we get a lot of unfollows. I do have a app that I see who unfollows us, so I kind of giggle when I see certain people. I'm like, oh yeah, that post really triggered the shit out of you. But
ooh, be careful, motherfuckers.
There was like this shoot up. I posted something about white feminism and it, like 25 unfollows that day, you know.
Oh dang.
Yeah, you know, you hear that, you see the crickets, but I wouldn't say anyone's directly pushing back. Which I think is like a sign of the times. Like, confrontation is not viewed as something healthy.
Well, that's
Well, and I think it just speaks to people want to stay comfortable, you know? And that's what we're seeing is like the struggle between people really wanting to stay comfortable in their own creature comforts versus being tasked to look at their world differently. Mm-hmm. You know, and people don't want to do that. Like, even coming from a mental health perspective, I got people coming in the therapy. Well, it's not the therapy room now; it's the Zoom room. But you know, people come to therapy wanting change, but then they still resist it and they're hesitant to it. You know, and so you got to think, like, even people who are willing and ready to change, there's still some level of hesitancy to it because it's too uncomfortable. Like, I don't like this feeling of discomfort, so I'm gonna push it back off on you.
You're not allowed to critique me.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, people just can't handle that discomfort. And I think, you know, and I'm not sure what that's about, but there definitely has been a bubble that's been created within this country, within this culture, that has allowed people to just stay in that safe space. And there is no growth in staying safe.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. And I mean, within the terms of, you know, you mentioned it's the Zoom room now, like, we've been going through this pandemic for the last 7 months. And a lot of people that would ignore a lot of issues going on because of they had the option of constant distraction. Many have been stuck within their own, you know, with just their own company and their own thoughts and having to do the shadow work and all that. So as a mental health professional, I mean, how have you seen that play out on your end, especially in terms of what we're talking about here with the election, with the issues of race in America?
Yeah, I mean, I think staying in one's mind is a very dangerous place to be. And that's what I've seen with so many people is that until we have our session, you know, maybe it's weekly or monthly or biweekly, but people don't have many people to talk to now. And so there are so many folks who are feeling disconnected. And as I love that quote that JoJo, that Jade said, that JoJo referenced, just about like people are so willing to look for that connection that it doesn't matter. Like as long as it makes them feel emotionally connected, it doesn't matter how illogical and idiotic it is, like at its base. Mm-hmm. As long as emotionally I feel like I can fit in, then cool, you know? And so there are just so many people who are just so disconnected, especially since no wonder to me that we've seen the just the results of that we have.
I think there's also like this connection of because I think we're all collectively going through like a paradigm shift as far as like as our mm-hmm. humanity or like mm-hmm. just inside the US context. I think there's this go-to for what has become mainstream now, the whole self-care and, you know, seeking, you know, again, the term doing the work, all of that, and how these practices rooted that have helped, you know, historically African indigenous folks to persevere over, you know, colonization and oppressed systems that are now still put in place, it has become like a commodity for mainly white culture and their psychology as far as like capitalizing on this like focus on me and my self-actualization like I need to be well, which yes, that is completely valid. I think, you know, this whole concept of like, you know, inside the airplane, put your mask on first and then, you know, mm-hmm. to your child or whoever's next to you, like that is completely valid. And it is very dangerous when you, when one, capitalism is tied to it, right? Because then like it creates this like following sort of like cult dynamic that happens, which is that whole like, it makes me feel good. It makes me feel good. So I'm just going to join this. Mm-hmm. But it's actually perpetuating a colonial pattern that has existed when, you know, from the beginning of its own history of colonization. So like I follow an account, shout out to the wellness therapist. She just like completely like dives into like really looking at how damaging this whole thing is with like, especially white women have a huge tendency of following a lot of like self-help gurus or self-care, you know, practices and all of that, that then makes them completely like blindfold themselves to what that it is rooted in. And it's actually damaging mm-hmm. women of color and people, you know, just the actual community that they say that they are intersectionally connected to, you know? So there's a whole thing to look into. And that also leads into the whole topic about, you know, that's very on the far left, like progressive racism that ties into mm-hmm. that. It's still a colonial practice. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking to your point, Assis, about how you were saying something about how, you know, like it feels good. I'm getting this information. I'm doing mm-hmm. this work. So you start going into this spiral, and in spiritual communities, that leads to what they call navel gazing. Mm-hmm. You know, you look so far inward that you're just fascinated by your own soul. Yeah. So you walk around all day, like just blind to all the other shit that's going on around you because you're still stuck looking at your center, you know?
Yep.
So speaking as a woman in the Latinx community, which is a community that is comprised of many distinct mm-hmm. cultures that intersect in so many different ways, how does this whole idea of, you know, doing the work and the, you know, the self-care and all that stuff, how does that play into the cultural upbringing that you come from?
I am a brown, like brown skin woman. And I have more melanin, I guess, than like a lighter, you know, lighter skin Latinx woman. And so like, I grew up with just, you know, I mean, I didn't know about racism or that brown was ugly or whatever. My own culture taught me that. My own Mexican American culture. I grew up in on the border, and it, you know, it's a 90 plus Mexican American community, and I wasn't being picked on by the very few white people that were in my town. It was all, you know, many, it was just Mexican folks. And also like culturally familial wise, like the saying, the racist sayings, like it's just all rooted in colonization. And so like, I grew up with this, like, you know, stigma that I created for myself until like, you know, I obviously started doing self-work and then realized like, you know, talking to other women of color, brown Latinx women, realizing like, oh, this is really like something. I'm not crazy here, right? Like, okay, this is rooted in history. And so that took me onto my journey of history and all of that. But a lot of it too, like I look at how, you know, lighter skinned, white passing Latinx women show a lot of the same tendencies as just white women, you know, like it's all the same thing, whiteness. And even if they're not white passing Latinx, you have hella brown Latinx folks who are like, you know, completely like Trump supporters, or like, you know, are not in anti-racist practices at all. And so it's very complicated. All I know is that I come from a country that's been 500 plus years colonized, and it has been affirmed and still is in that sense. And then crossed into this country that basically mutated into like the, you know, when you look at the US context, it's like, there's an actual race called white, do you know? So coming from that affirmation, like, oh, you are actually white in this country, and there is, you know, privilege that's attached to that. So this sort of like colonized mentality gets reinforced in this country, even, you know, when you migrate here. And so there's just like a lot of that's tied into it. There's a lot, you know, colorism is the main thing that we are, you know, me as a Mexican American woman, I have experienced in my own Mexican American communities, that, you know, has supported, you know, the father, which is racism. And so it's just been a journey of looking at that, right? Like how can I contribute to doing anti-blackness work inside Mexican American communities, anti-indigeneity. We have a huge anti-indigenous sentiment in my home country. And so then that's rooted in if you look at the melanation of those peoples, it's brown. It's, you know, so it's that racism and classism is so much tied into the Mexican experience. And so it is here in the US, but you just see it. You see it so strongly in Mexico, just because you have a huge indigenous, you still have a huge, you know, big indigenous communities that have survived. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I feel like too, I think just listening to everything that's been stated so far, I think what's really at the foundation is, you know, if we take away constructs, it's just a very highly, high level of codependency. Really think about it, because white supremacy is codependency. And I think if you even look at it in like a very simple gesture, we're taught from an early age to depend on someone else to make it in life. That starts out with our parents, and then after that our parents start telling us that you need to be married to this type of person and thrive in life. And then after that, you know, as babies, they're like, oh no, you don't play with dolls, you play with this if you're a boy. So we have to be dependent on gender, you know, conformity. You know, and there's just so many different things that play into being codependent. So by the time we get to an adult, it's very damn near impossible to break apart from having to be codependent to a system that you've been taught your whole life. So I think ultimately it's just, that's mainly just what's at the forefront, is a lot of people are just dependent on being codependent. And unfortunately, assimilation is the currency of thriving in life. So, yeah. You know, the more you de-assimilate, the more you lose, you know, touch and happen to, I don't know, I guess not, maybe not touch, you lose more, like, reach of how much you can make, you know, in life, money-wise. You know, so a lot of folks are, I mean, that goes all the way back to, like, slave days, on plantation days, really, where you have, like, certain, you know, house Negroes, they're like, yo, don't rock the ship. You know, like, otherwise, master's going to get me out the house. You know, like, you can't get into this house. You know, and the other dudes, like, the field Negroes are like, dog, are you serious? Like, I'm trying to escape. It's like, dude, just, you know, just be calm and, you know, everything else would be fine. You know what I mean? And it's just, nothing's changed. It's just evolved. But, again, that's just that codependency mentality that we've been taught that, oh, if you do this, then that means you'll get ahead in this, blah, 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 blah. So, and it's really difficult for us to break apart from that. We aren't taught that we can thrive on our own. Not to say that we all have to, because obviously there's a balance. And obviously with everything, like, not to say that white people can go, oh, great, no codependency, cool, then I'm not white. No, that's not at all what we're saying. Like, obviously there's acceptance. Not everything's binary. But it does at least, like, make a lot of sense of why it's so difficult for everyone to break apart from white supremacy if they feel that it benefits them in some way.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add too, like, as you were saying that, I thought about the whole kind, and you see what you were saying too, like, just identifying with the aggressor, right? So, so many people think that if they identify with the aggressor, which is whiteness, right, then I'm safe. I'll be okay. I'll be protected. Like, and that's exactly, I mean, I read that book, and she was talking about just, which is was very clear to me even before I read that book, but that's exactly what he did. He identified with his dad, who was the aggressor in the system, and his brother got basically written out of the will and kicked out of the family. And these folks who are running around thinking that they're safe and protected from this dude are like, just the fact that, like, they think that, okay, if I support him, he's going to support me. He's going to support me, too. He's got my back. He don't give two shits about you.
Right.
You know? But it's the whole concept of even, like, if we identify with the person who's the aggressor, but also, like, when you look at the caste system, we're all going to be relegated to the bottom, you know, whether it's Latinx, but especially Black is going to be at the bottom. But everybody is going to be underneath that whiteness. People think that it's like crabs in a barrel. You know, if I try hard enough and please Massa, he's going to really love me. He's going to keep me in the house. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, yeah.
Well, yeah. And to speak to your point, Damon, the saying is, what is it? It's better to be the right hand of the devil than to be in his path. And that dynamic counts as well for, as Ta-Nehisi Coates would call the low whites, right? Like in the novels that he's written, like, I have spent a lot of time working in blue collar construction, and I get to hear white people that don't have a pot to piss in, you know, talk about identifying with the capitalist ruling class. And, like, you know, considering it always astounded me, like, considering how many contractors and tradesmen that Trump fucked over purposefully, right? People like us, you know, and to hear those people, like, you know, praise him. And I'm like, you shit in a portisan. If you think that somebody who literally shits in a gold toilet gives two fucks about you, you know, and he's turning us against, you know, people that we have way more in common with socioeconomically than we do him, you know. But I'm glad that Jade brought up codependency, because that's a concept I've been struggling with just as the child of an addict, right? And how you say, Damon, like, identifying with the aggressor, identifying with, you know, these destructive power sources as a response to abuse. You know, so I wanted to delve a little bit deeper into that concept with you, since you have a lot of experience with the concept of codependency. I assume.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that. And, you know, when I think about, well, actually, let me just say this. So we've all been victims of trauma. Mm-hmm. Let's like for the last at least 4 years. I mean, and I'm being very generous, but just like blatantly, we've been victims of trauma. And so we're all going to need to do some work when it comes to splitting and separating from the system that he's brought to light and really taking a look and saying, what role do we have in this? You know, codependency is, again, that desire to hold on to and glom onto these systems in hopes that you find yourself, essentially, right? And I think we've all lost a part of ourselves in this, and it's finding our role in this fight, finding our role in this struggle, and really individuating from that system that has put us all together. And we're, and just like what you were saying in the beginning, none of us are a monolith, and you know how we can really start to individuate and express ourselves and in a healthy way, you know, but it can't be done the same way that it's been done. It's like being in that system of, you know, growing up in an abusive household and hoping that things change and just relying on hope to change the system. And that's not what changes it. Somebody has to get help or somebody has to lead.
Yep. I don't know. So. Pick your brain about it, because we're talking about codependency, and you had sent in an article talking about like white supremacy is narcissism. And I feel like, you know, narcissism and narcissism and codependency, they work in comparison. I'm sorry, in companion, right? And it almost feels like, kind of based in what Jade was saying and also what you're saying, it's like white supremacy is like point A on a GPS, and it's narcissism. And in order for us to function, like, in air quotes, conjunction with that, we have to be codependent to, like, deny ourselves and rely on this thing and kind of serve this thing. I feel like that's kind of a way to look at it. Or one thing I wish I could, like if I had a magic message to share with like every white person, it would be like, we're all suffering from white supremacy. Like that denouncing white supremacy, like, leaves you with less. It doesn't. Like, we're all negatively affected by it. Even white people. So
yes,
I feel like white people don't get that aspect. And so I'd love to just hear your thoughts on that dynamic of like, how white supremacy is narcissistic, how we have to show up and be codependent with it, and how it's all like this water in the fishbowl we can't see that's like hurting us from fully expressing ourselves.
Yeah, so first and foremost, I mean, there's just, and let me just be clear, everybody loses like in this game. So, and that's why the system has to change.
Yes.
But, you know, with narcissism, there's an inflated sense of, you know, the self-importance, that everything that we do is the best, and this is my land, and God bless us, and like, and nobody else.
God bless us, everyone.
Everyone, right?
But not you, or you,
right? Or you. Wait, do you believe in God? Because then, if not,
definitely not you.
No, he's not. And then it just requires like so much, and you see it in this president, right? So if you don't love him, if you don't admire him, if you don't like suck up to him, you have no use, or he has no use for you, right? And he is so quick to throw you under the bus. And I think that that's the same way that the system operates. If you're not willing to play along in this game, like, okay, we have no place for you in this system.
Yeah. Right? Then you're a problem.
And then you're a problem, right? And then you're seen as, right, exactly. When in fact, like, you actually care so much about the system. It's the same thing in families too, right? You care so much about the system that you want it to work out. You want it to be well and healthy. And unfortunately, the person with narcissism, the person with the addiction, the person who is dealing with the most, they're not going to be the ones who are ever going to get help, right? They are the people who, I'm good, you're the issue. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about personality disorders, and that's what we look at when we look at white supremacy, is a personality disorder. And I've actually written up a whole thing about putting racism and white supremacy in the DSM, which is our book that we diagnose people with. And I don't really like to diagnose people at all. Again, going back to what Isis was saying earlier, it's based on the system that was developed by white men and for white people. So it feels really uncomfortable to do so. And I think it's good to have like a baseline of symptoms to go from, but I digress. So, but the point is the people who need the help the most in this system are the ones who are not going to get it because they have been uplifted and supported and they have been allowed and enabled. And we see it with this president. He could not do this without his enablers. He could not do it without his enablers in Congress, the GOP, his supporters. Like, and so, and that's what helps the system continue. And we're back here like, how are they letting him get away with this? Easy. Easy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it builds support because for them.
Right. And it makes them, exactly. And they feel, right. And that's that whole sense of, well, if he's important, I'm important. And if he's successful, I'm successful. If he's admired, then I'll be admired. That's not sustainable.
So for the next part of this, and you guys can absolutely like, we don't, you know, if this isn't the road you want to go down, that's totally cool. But as an idea, as we mentioned at the beginning, like a lot of people are scared right now. There's a lot of discussions to be had about what the fuck we're going to do now, regardless of whether or not Trump is in office or if Biden takes over. The problems remain essentially the same.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, if you guys are down for it, that we can go through just a list of ideas as to possible steps forward in a couple different fields, if that makes sense to you. If not, we can totally rap about something else.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that works.
Perfect, perfect. So in terms of, and if y'all have suggestions for topics, like fire them out, like this is free forum, but the things that come to mind just off the top of my head are what to do in terms of mental health care, what to do in terms of defending yourself and making sure you and your people stay safe, your families, your friends, et cetera. What to do about addressing allies in the scene or the concept of allyship or like just how to keep, how to make sure people are acting right. Mm-hmm. And then, how are we going to hold the powerful to account? Like, let's say Biden does get in and we do have this, you know, people letting off the gas, you know, because that's kind of the argument. We need him in because at least we can push him a certain way or we can get certain shit done. So how do we go about doing that?
I personally think the first step that needs to happen is people need to get into communities where they can be held accountable. I think in the dance community, there aren't communities happening, which is why you have a lot of popular dancers, you know, saying shit or don't think that what they're saying is problematic because they're not being checked at all. Like, I mean, I can just hit dance terms since one, we're all dancers, and I think dancers mostly listen to this, so y'all can relate to this. But at the end of the day, how do you get better at your particular dance form? You put yourself around dancers who are better than you in that dance form. Mm-hmm. So, but for some reason, we can't fathom that concept when it comes to something outside of our own reality. Like, I'm an expert at, you know, racial injustice, even though I've never fucking studied anything about it. But I know what I'm talking about. Oh, no, it's cool. Like, I know exactly what I'm talking about when it comes down to Black history, even though I'm not Black and I've never studied anything about it. Like, what? Mm. But yet, y'all are like, so hell bent on like, yo, know your history when it comes to hip hop, know your history when it comes to popping, or joking, like, yo, but when it comes to like actual sociology and shit, that doesn't apply. So I think ultimately we need to establish actual communities, or even as like we put them like container groups, where people can put themselves around folks that actually know what they're talking about and can hold them accountable. So that way, we're just not on the fuck shit as much. And then secondly, I think as far as like defending yourself, I think at the end of the day, like, I know people are not, are not the shooting type, which I understand. But the same thing, I think it's better to be prepared than to have to get prepared. You know, or just get like brass knuckles, anything that can give you some form of like defense where you ain't got to rely on like just the bare minimum, you know, like just think smart. Don't go outside as much. You know, I know a lot of dancers love the session right now, but it's like, yo, like got to conserve that or find a safe place where you all can go session. But something go in groups, you know. Also, this is kind of a, this kind of is unfortunate for me because I have a lot of it, but, you know, like not wearing certain clothes that has Black Lives Matter on it and shit, and things that can stir up emotions of white people. You know, I have a lot of those clothes because I'm the type of person that I'm a Malcolm X type of dude. So for me, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm rocking with whatever I want to rock, but at the same time, safety is first. So be aware of like what we wear, where we wear it, how we're wearing it, you know. So yeah, I think those are going to just be like very, very important for people to start actually following anti-racist educators so they can start actually getting that information at a faster rate, so that way that this whole like decline that's going to happen doesn't happen as rapidly.
I'm from Texas, and so, you know, so there was a part of me that was like, this might be your year that you just flip to blue, Texas, and that's not going to happen anytime soon. So I'm like, but what I'm seeing with Arizona is a testament to the grassroots led Mexican American peoples living in that area, where you know, I, the same way I give credit to, if you know, the reason where Georgia is now is because of the trailblazing of Black women, and where Arizona is right now is because of Mexican Americans organizing and doing grassroots movements in response to Joe Arpaio's like 24-year reign of like abusive immigrant immigration law, you know, the show me your papers law that was put in place. Anyway, so what came out of that was like Lucha, one of the grassroots organizations that really started mobilizing. And what you're seeing now is like truly inspiring, you know, to just see how, what, you know, the power that people have too. And so I also, but either if Trump wins or Biden wins, I don't want it to go back to like, oh, leave it to the grassroots people to like be the ones to do all the work, but really like that mentality to really like become part of our culture, you know, that we are, you know, getting ourselves outside of our comfortable spots and comfortable neighborhoods, communities, wherever we are, and like, you know, being able to be welcomed into other communities, not just entering them, right, or exiting them, but really truly trying to find ways in which we can cross-pollinate so that we can create a culture of organizing and mobilizing. For me, I think that's, you know, we have a really long road to go, and we're not, you know, I'm okay with the fact that I'm not going to see it in my lifetime, but I do think that we have to continue in this way of spreading our mentality of community-based grassroots mobilizing. So, but that's hard, you know. It's a lot. It sounds really cute when I say. I just felt cute when I said it. You know, I'm like, oh my god, that sounds really great. But like, that shit's hard, you know. Like, trying to find like extra time out of your schedule and like, you know, like, yeah, it's gonna, there's gonna be some sort of develop, have these muscles that we're gonna have to start to develop. And we're starting to see it right now, but we really, really got to keep working on those muscles per se. So, yeah.
Wonderful points.
I would say, I'll just speak on like addressing allies. You know, as soon as the Black Lives Matter movement came out, you know, I was able to say like, yeah, Black Lives Matter. Of course they matter, right? And then I remember having like a conversation with Jade, and I was saying like, I just feel like it's not my place to do something as a white person. This is like 4 years ago. I said, you know, I don't know if it's like my place to do it as a white person. And, you know, like, that's literally where my thinking was at that time. And he was like, it's extra your place to do something because you're black. You know, literally, like, that was new information for me in that moment. And, you know, fast forward, I guess, 3 years later, you know, like, basically, again, another conversation with Jade, it was like, hey, just because you're doing work, air quotes, for the culture, doesn't mean that you don't have inherent racism and bias. And I think, like, that's a really important distinction, because I feel like, you know, we as white people, one, we should never label ourselves as an ally. Like, that's not something that we get to, like, knight ourselves with. But secondly, that, like, the external work is kind of more of the problem, because it says, like, you need my help. The internal work is what basically signals that, like, no, I see I'm the problem now. I'm the one that needs repair. And that's where that external work can come from. But if you don't do that internal work, it'll be external work. And so addressing a lot of this stuff through my taking a course with Lee's and just being in close proximity to Jade, I feel like, you know, every step of the way I did dumb shit and made mistakes and just, you know, kept going. And I think, like, as white people, we're like, oh, I don't want to make mistakes. But, like, we've been making mistakes for 400 years. So mistakes in the right direction. So I would just encourage white people to, like, really do the difficult, uncomfortable, challenging, questioning, humbling work. That can feel something like guilt and shame and ego death. But if you keep going, you can come on the other side of, like, actually being able to love and hold space in a healthy way and honor the people that actually, like, when you think about it, I mean, I haven't found anything that's not Black culture. Like, I just found out the other day coffee is Black culture. And, you know, it's just, like, literally, like, we as white people, we really need to know our position here. Reese talks about it, like, we should not be on stage. We need to sell tickets to the show. We pull curtains, you know, but this is not our time to, like, be on stage. And I think, like, yeah, I mean, when, like, in terms of, like, tactical steps, when I see someone following me, I check out their profile. If I see something problematic, I say something. If I have people who I know are friends and might listen to me, I reach out and I hit them in the DMs and I explain what this work means to me and why I encourage them to do it. I think, you know, community is forefront.
Well, sorry to cut you off, but we have a hard time as white people, like, playing supportive roles. Like, we want to be the hero. Like, and it's, can you be Robin and let somebody else be Batman?
Yeah.
You know? And if you can't, like, because we all grew up on those bullshit movies of, like, some white teacher goes to South Central and teaches the kids violin. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I want to do that. You
know? Oh, my God.
I'm going to have I'm going to be at the fucking forefront. I'm the general. And it's like, fuck off.
White savior mentality. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's just, it's this, this fucking need, this compulsion to be, like, the center of attention, said the white guy with a podcast. And you just,
you haven't spoken much though, so you're doing good.
Oh, thank you so much. See, I got my cookie, guys. But I think the other problem is that, like, we have this idea if we do mean well, that we, like, succumb to the whole guilt thing and all this other shit, which again just centers the whole thing on us and our feelings. And oh God, there was something I wanted to get to. Oh yeah, and this is particularly bad, like, when we're addressing racism and white supremacy, like, it's very easy to point to the conservatives or anyone who leans right and showcase that particular flavor of racism, because more often than not, it's super fucking obvious.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And while I could, like, talk about that, like, none of them are listening to the show right now. So I think it's important to address liberal racism, right?
Yeah.
This idea that, like, just because I vote for the Democrats, or just because, like, I call myself a progressive and I've fucking, like, backed Bernie Sanders twice, like,
yes,
or God forbid I voted for Barack Obama, like, just because I did that shit does not mean shit when it comes to whether or not I have racist tendencies or thoughts or problematic behavior.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you brought that up. central and liberal, I think like a perfect example is J-Rock, you know, because he's very big on voting, you know, like, oh no, we gotta vote. We never talk mm-hmm. anything about dismantling ever. Mm. And I think to a degree, those types of liberals know, like, if they actually look within, that means they no longer become important.
And yeah.
I think too, like, like another prime example of what Jordan Peele did with the Get Out was really show how horrific liberals can look with old girl's dad, you know, and and even the I can't remember the black dude's name, the actor, but even his girlfriend, you know, like those are the worst kind of racists for me because they don't think they're racist.
Yeah.
Like those are the ones I have no respect. Mm. I have respect. I always say this, it's a dark joke for me, but I always say I respect someone that's like a Trump who I know for sure they don't fuck with. Or if I go down to the South and I talk to like the KKK members, they're like, yeah, I hate you. I don't like, no, don't come around me. Like, cool, great. Because they're on the same page. Fine. I admire that you're so bold to tell me you don't fuck with me. But mm-hmm. if you come down to people and they're fronting day and day of like, no, I'm not racist because I'm such a good person. But yet they keep upholding the very system that oppresses me. And then I'm like, then I really don't fuck with you. Because you're not even like courageous enough to say that you just don't fuck with me because of my skin color. You know, like I don't want nothing to do with you because of what I've been taught with. Like that I totally respect. Because at least you're living in that particular lifestyle of an ideology. But it's so problematic that liberals, I feel, have really started to run the rest of the country than conservatives have after the Civil War. You know, because like, oh, great, yeah, slavery's now abolished. Cool, great. Jim Crow doesn't exist. Cool, great. But yet, all the shit was still happening. We saw it in the media, in TV shows and cartoons. We saw it through, like, all types of different, like, Hollywood. Then all the white saviorism movies came out, and people were like, see, racism can be solved. Simple. We just got to, you know, live by love and light and all this shit. So ultimately, I think that those are the ways, the worst kind of racist for me are the ones that are liberal, because at the end of the day, they don't acknowledge that they also have a part to play in upholding that system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we just all need to come from the assumption and the understanding that we all, well, you know, especially white people, but hey, we come up in a racist system. Mm-hmm. So therefore you are going to be mm-hmm. that, you know, like it just doesn't even make sense to come from any other assumption. Yep. You know, and what Jade, you were saying is it reminded me of when we, my dad was in the military. So we moved around. Growing up, and we lived in Oklahoma for a lot of my elementary school years, and then we moved to Massachusetts from there. But I remember, like, the conversation was, at least in Oklahoma, we knew who we were dealing with, right? Like, my friend, like, as soon as I got to middle school, I had white friends in my group who could no longer hang out with us, like, because their parents said, you're not hanging out with them. Mm-hmm. So we were like, cool, at least we know who we're dealing with. Going to Massachusetts, I didn't know who was my ally and who was my enemy. Mm-hmm. Now, being somebody who has white family, I had the inside scoop and got to hear some stories about how people clearly talk shit about black people, and you know, so it's really interesting, like. You know, they'll talk about it amongst themselves and then put on a different face in front of, you know, the general public. Uh-huh. And that to me is scarier than, like you said, Jade, like at least I know who my enemy is on certain levels here. Absolutely. But like not really knowing that, that to me is disturbing.
Yeah, you can protect yourself a little bit more when, you know, people are on more of a covert, you know, overt version of. Because mm-hmm. you can see it, they're way more like actual, like just embodied in it. You know, like mm-hmm. when me and Joe recently went to Lake Tahoe for a vacation trip, and I was kind of just thrown for a loop because it's in the north. Shit is still part of Nevada, but yet there were still like Confederate flags and you know, there was just so many American flags. And for me, I'm like, well, I already know what you're standing on.
Yeah.
Trump side everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, damn, but I thought this was the North. You know, but yet the North mm-hmm. prides themselves on, like, well, now we're not like the South. Thank God. Mm-hmm. It's like, are you sure? Because I think you are. You just haven't acknowledged it yet. So ultimately, yeah, I think you can protect yourself a little bit more with conservatives. But when it comes down to liberals, it's way more dangerous because they haven't told you, hey, you're not safe around me. Mm-hmm. So by the time you figure that out, oh, I'm not safe around you, harm has already been done.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It really, when you think about it, like, it's a brainwashing.
Yeah.
That's happened, you know, and they've convinced themselves that they're okay. Like, and that to me again is, it's like somebody coming into therapy because their spouse said so, and they're like, I don't see anything wrong. Like, I'm cool. They're the ones who have the issue.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I've talked to some of those folks in the DMs and been like, hey, like, I really want you to see this. Like, and it's just very like, no, you know, I got beat up because I was white and. I'm like, you know, it's that balance of not trying to educate but talk to them. And yeah, it's mm-hmm. yeah, I totally feel you, Damon. Like, they don't even know that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But that just goes back to, like, not asking, which still is centering and, you know, based in white supremacy.
Yeah.
And speaking of self-defense, as Jade was, and I'm sorry for whoever I just cut off. I could hear the intake. and please, like, get on it after this. But when speaking of self-defense, Jade a couple times has brought up firearms, which, you know, before this, for a long time, I was very, like, nah, I'm not about it. But at the same time, like, I can afford to be, right? Mm-hmm. I walk outside and can pretend and camouflage and be whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knows unless I choose for them to know. But when we're talking about, like, arming yourself, like, this harkens back to, you know, what the Black Panther movement was really about, as opposed to what white culture is maligned it to be. You know, this was about communities defending themselves, protecting their rights and standing up for their own justice, and look what the government did to them. So I think it's important to be responsible. Like, if you do get a firearm, I think it's very important that you learn how to shoot, that you learn firearm safety. And I want to shout out a Black-owned gun club in Denver. I think it's the first Black-owned gun club, 1770. They have extensive classes, extensive education that, you know, they will teach you how to use it properly, effectively, and as safely as possible. So I think it's important to educate yourself in terms of that form of self-defense as well, if you choose to go that route.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, actually my husband and I just had this conversation yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as a gay Black male, like, walking out, I'm like, and if he and I were to go somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're just so, and he's like, we need to get one. I'm like, I know. And I don't know if I even want to support the gun lobby, you know, the gun industry.
Yeah.
We come up on one, but it's a shame that this is where we even are. I mean, I'm not surprised. Yeah. I'm not saying this like that I'm surprised about this, but it's just a shame that this is even where we are, that it's a reality at this point. Like, I think that's exactly what it's going to come down to. And like you said, Jade, maybe I don't get a gun because I'm like, I don't know if I want a gun in here, but maybe I can get those brass knuckles. I don't
know. There you go. I mean, learn to use those too. Like, learn self-defense.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's not just about being strapped. It's about knowing what weapons you have at your disposal and how to use them as effectively and safely as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I've always, you know, stayed away from ever thinking that I would own a gun or anything. And we don't own a gun. Well, at least my husband hasn't told me that he has a gun here.
But... Surprise. One would hope that he would tell you, yeah.
Right. Now I'm like, wait a minute. I'm going to talk to him after this.
Sweetie.
yeah. But to be honest, like, Yeah, I don't think I would still. And then I also think I have a daughter and she's 19 months old. And so, you know, I get, you know, just the thought of anything. I'm like, give me that gun. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, what? No. But that's just like when I start to, again, tap into that fear and that anxiety. And then, you know, where my mind is, of course, protect my daughter at all costs. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm trying to work into that fear that has definitely, you know, come up because of this. I was looking at the map of the electoral votes. I mean, you know, with CNN has had for the last 3 days, and I'm like, you know, we're planning to do this cross country trip to Miami for the holidays. And I'm like, all right, so this is the map of where we're not going to stay. Like when we travel to Miami,
the green book. That,
like, you know what I mean? Like it's the new green book. Mm-hmm. Like, but like, and I joke, you know, and I like do a nervous laughter. And my husband's like rolling his eyes like, oh, cause he, you know, I do have this like fear for, you know, white radical terrorists, you know, are that do exist in this country. And that fear comes from, because we have the history to attest to it, you know, like, even though it was not boldly written in the history books that we were, you know, taught in grade school, we still know that you know, these homegrown terrorists have been here, and they will continue to be here. And so I'm working like y'all, like daily on that, like I don't want to keep building onto that fear, because that's what these radical, like, you know, hella like right-wing folks that are arming up too, like, think about undocumented communities, or, you know, black and brown communities, anything that's not white, I guess. But yeah, I'm just like constantly working on that, because I do feel it in me, and like sometimes it grows even more, like when I see like the vast redness of the country, of the map of this country. So it's just something that I'm working on. But I don't know, you know, I'm not saying I'll never get a gun, I'm not saying that I'm gonna get one tomorrow, but I know that fear has something to do with it, and I'm working through it.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because as I mentioned before, like, my partner is a queer Black woman, mixed race Black woman, and she, you know, has been the fear and the anxiety and the just the existential terror has been mounting the closer we got to this election, to a point where, like, last week she broke down in the middle of a supermarket, because she works for, like, you know, conservative white folks as a line therapist for their autistic kids, and she can't talk about it there. Her white grandmother is a Trump supporter, like all this shit. So, like, she just was holding it in for so long, and then it all just came spilling out when we're like in the pharmacy section of a grocery store, you know, and we just had to like hunker down in the corner and like let it out. So because you talk about this anxiety, this fear, etc., Damon, I know you can feel me just pointing this at you, but
no.
What are some advice you can give the listeners who are experiencing this same dread right now? What are some things that they can do to manage this? What are some things they can do to, if not feel better, at least gain some sort of functionality and be able to manage this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to go with what's already been said, which is find community. You know, it's so important to surround yourself with people who understand you, who get it, who are dealing with the exact same thing, because there's nothing worse than feeling like you're in this alone. And so finding that community, and fortunately we do have opportunities, you know, if people can't find it at work or in their home, maybe they can find it online somewhere. That could be finding a therapist as well. You know, a coach or somebody who is trained to do that work. I know sometimes for people, there's a lot of shame in feeling whatever it is that they're feeling. There are people out there who are trained to deal with what you're dealing with. You know, so reaching out for help, it's okay. Like, and especially nowadays, it's like, no wonder why you're going through and feeling all these things. Like, reach out for help. I got to say, kind of the traditional things that come up, which are, you know, meditation, yoga, exercise, movement, dance, getting that, like you said, with your partner, that she just had to get it out. And that's what our emotions need to do. And that's physically, mentally, and emotionally. So if it means crying, if it means moving through it, creating music, creating, you know, blogs, whatever it might be. And also, I've just found EFT tapping as a powerful tool, where you tap on different acupressure points and just acknowledge all your feelings. And then you allow that energy to get out of your system. So those are just some of those things that I think are going to be important. And there's a really awesome app called Insight Timer. It has all sorts of meditations and talks and music and this and that. I mean, it's just like thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of those, and it's free. And the Tapping Solution has a great app as well. And that's a great tool to have.
Excellent. Thank you. And I'm going to reach out to you privately after this to get a list of whatever else you can throw at people, especially those who maybe don't have insurance right now, maybe don't have the resources that would allow them to easily, you know, get counsel. Whatever alternatives we can provide for people, I think is a good, you know, a good way to go. So if you don't mind.
No, and can I just say, it reminds me, I'm actually going to be meeting with this group in a couple of minutes here. But there's been a group of Black tapping EFT practitioners who we've assembled in the last couple of weeks, and we're really wanting to create that space for people, because this is a free tool that you can use. You don't need me or any therapist to use it. And so we're talking about ways to get the word out and spread that and to be able to make it accessible and affordable to people.
Well, excellent. This is definitely, I will do whatever I can on this platform to spread that. And if you guys, if y'all out in the world who are listening and could use this are interested, like, stay tuned. We'll put up as much information as we can.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. And so I feel like we're winding down on time, but also I know that this by no means is an extensive list of all the things people want to talk about. So for all of the guests assembled, if there's something that you definitely wanted to address or something you want to leave the audience with, I think now would be a good time to bring that out.
I just wanted to jump in. There was like a thought I kind of wanted to address that I didn't get to complete. We were talking about addressing allies, and it was just that, like, your action steps, our action steps, like, they don't have to be epic. We kind of think of ourselves as the hero, right? So we're like, oh, I need to do this big epic thing, but it's really not that. It's, like I said, you know, looking at people who follow you and reaching out. It's talking to your family members, you know, or I should say it's us talking to our family members. Like, it's all that little baby steps constantly every day and having sustainable commitment that's going to slowly shift and spread out. So I just wanted to share that.
Excellent. Jade, any closing thoughts on your end?
Not really, but I do have a quote from Will Smith that he shared, and After Earth, actually. And he said, "Fear is a product of thoughts that we create, but danger is very real." That's it.
Can you say it again? Sorry.
Yeah, he said, "Fear is a product of thoughts that we create." He said, but danger is very real.
Mm-hmm.
And Isis, is there anything that you've got burning inside you that you...
No, I mean, yeah, no, I'm like worried about the Latinx community, and that's mainly where my focus is, as we keep growing and growing and growing. And our roots tied to colonization, like, are deep. So that's kind of just where my mind is. And also, like, the level of, I don't want to end on a world peace note, but also I do want to just, like, I think everyone collectively, like, because we're having a lot of paradigm shift, it does take a level of vulnerability to even tap into on all ends. And I think that's something that I'm also personally on that journey. I think sometimes I tend to hang on to my identity so much as a non-white passing Latinx woman. And I think there's just like a lot of just self-work that I'm doing in that, but also like, you know, just reflecting on that word vulnerability.
Excellent. Damon.
You know, I'm just thinking about that Audre Lorde quote, caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it's self-preservation. Mm. And that is an act of political warfare. Mm. And, you know, I think it's important for all of us to remember, and I know we talk a lot about self-care, but it is so important at this time, because if we can't be there for ourselves and take care of ourselves, we can't be there for our communities. And that's what this is about, is how do we continue to create and grow communities? And it might seem like things are so disparate right now, but the more that things get, and my guess is they're just going to get more intense, and the stronger the communities are going to be built out of that. So I truly believe that we're going to build some really powerful communities, and there's a lot of resistance right now, but people are going to be, and I'm hopeful for that. And I thank you for, you know, just Rob for hosting this and allowing us and giving us this platform to talk about this.
Well, I'm very honored that you all would trust me to come on, especially since this is our first time meeting.
Right.
But I'm very pleased with everything that you've brought to the table, and I look forward, hopefully, to having each and every person on individually onto the show and just getting to know more about y'all and sharing that information with my listeners. And in that spirit, how can people, this is addressed to everyone, how can everyone get a hold of you? How can everyone follow your work and what you do?
For me, it's Instagram mainly, and you can follow me at La Morena Moves, LAMORENA Moves, and that's me.
And I'm on Instagram as well. They can get in contact with me there. And it's at Dr. Damon Silas, and that's DrDamonSilas.
Awesome.
Me, Jade Soul Zuberi on IG. And you can also reach my Patreon if you want to either donate monthly or actually get exclusive information that I don't share on IG. And my Patreon is in my link in my bio on the same page on my Instagram.
And we'll be including those links in the show notes, as well as the mental health resources that we mentioned earlier. This goes for everyone too, with your IGs, that will all be in print.
Thank you.
Yeah,
of course. And JoJo, how can the people follow you?
Same Instagram at JoJo Diggs, and then Freedom Movement, just one M in the middle. And shout out to Wheeze, who's been my mentor and has been a huge provider of everything I said today. So you can follow her at According to Wheeze. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, with that in mind, we will wind down. If anyone's, the listeners know, if you've still got drinks left in your glass, we raise them to the sky in the traditional toast of the show, which is to the end of the world and to the beginning of a better world.
Cheers.
Cheers. Y'all, it has been an absolute honor. Thank you so much for gracing this very humble show with your presence. And I look forward to speaking with all of you again. In the meantime, stay safe. Do what you need to do for yourselves. Go forward into the world in love. And, you know, just everyone be kind to each other. That goes for everyone at home, too. So this is... Rob Celtic. My guests today have been Jade Soul Zuberi, JoJo Diggs, Isis Avalos, and Dr. Damon Silas. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Rob. You're awesome.
Thank you. Thank you, Rob, for this. Thank you.
Of course. And until next time, we will endure, we will grow, and we will overcome. God bless.
This is for you. This episode of Drinking and Dance at the End of the World was written and produced by me, Rob Celtic. Music for this episode was provided by the one and only Feathers. That's F-T-H-R-S. You can find his new album, Floating, on Spotify and Bandcamp under Feathers. If you like what you heard and you want to support the show, visit us on Patreon at patreon.com/drinkinganddance and donate for early episode releases, bonus episodes, personal shoutouts, and more. Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to like, favorite, and follow on Spotify and Anchor. We'll see you next time.